The Spinoff Podcast Network. Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q Quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right, and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call, or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix podcast. Tune in today.
Kia ora tātou, this is Toby Manhai with another episode of your friendly local politics podcast, Gone by Lunchtime. What you're about to hear is part of the Gone by Lunchtime Megapod, a 12-hour epic event recorded on September 20 at Spinoff HQ. Enjoy. Tēnā koutou katoa. We're back.
Hey, sorry, Annabelle and I just had to duck out. We just had to duck out at 10 a.m.
And we had to do something,
but we're back now. How's it gone?
You were here just before, Ben. Did I hallucinate that?
I think so.
It was a real pod session. What have you been doing, Annabelle?
Work and and also all on my own because my husband's away.
Yeah.
So I did all the working and then I did all the parenting and then I came here. Can I say do you guys remember that movie Blue Valentine with Ryan Gosling and what's her name? Michelle. She was married to Heath Ledger.
Michelle Williams.
No. And there's a bit in the movie where she starts screaming at him, "I'm so out of love with you," and then pounding her chest. There's nothing left in here for you. There's nothing left in here for you. It's a little bit where I'm at with you guys. And the selection.
That would be such a harsh buzzkill. Been going for 12 hours and then Annabelle breaks up with us on the last hour. Don't do that.
Sorry.
She's joining caucus.
Cut it out.
What have you been doing, Ben?
Yeah, a bit of work. Day job, keeping up with the campaign.
How's Stuart Nash doing?
Did you ask?
Fortunately I checked just before he came on. He got up to 5,600 press ups. Then he had to be rushed to Hastings for shoulder surgery.
Are you serious?
But he's patched up and back on his way. 6,300 press ups.
Did you ask Michael Wood about the band?
I didn't.
I asked you one thing.
I asked him about yaks.
What did he say about yaks?
Fuck me.
He went
you
for
guys are getting the real me. This is what I'm like after 8 o'clock. You can imagine what life is like for my husband. I should have been in bed half a fucking hour ago. So you're getting the real pod, the real Gone by Lunchtime.
I did. I asked about yaks. And
that was Ben wanted,
no,
not what I wanted.
He chose a donkey. Which you mentioned the donkey.
He chose
a donkey. He said he wanted a donkey. His redemption animal is going to be a donkey.
Oh, my God, love.
And he's got a family history of donkeys.
Mm.
Wait, what?
What, is he Jesus or something?
Do you not remember the conversation we had earlier about how Simon Bridges had a yak?
Yeah.
Yes,
family history with donkeys? That's what I want to know.
Not in the family tree. You know, just.
I think that would make him a mule if that was the case.
So anyway, that's an achievement, isn't it? I did not ask him about, what was it?
Alan Woods and Nash.
Alan Woods and Nash. That's a good gag.
I can hear the music already in my head and I want to download it.
Hour one, you were like, oh, yeah, Alan Nash and
Alan
Woods.
Nash and
I remember that in hour 12.
I think we were talking about it just before I hear rudely played us off our own pod.
Yeah, he's gone home now. He's resigned.
How are you feeling?
Yeah, good.
Are you sick of the humans?
Not really. I kind of had a little bit of a wobble, I think, about hour 10. But then, you know, I just pushed on through.
Are you sick of the politics?
Long chat with Bernard, who you were just talking to in the green room. What were you talking to Bernard about? It was a very intense conversation. I had to crowbar you out of there.
Everything.
Was it about infrastructure under investment?
Yep.
Was it about the economy being a housing market with a bit stuck onto it?
Yep. Was about all of that stuff and the history of Taranaki and the history of Galatea. Like everything. It was everything. If you had a private audience with Bernard Hickey, wetlands, forestry, it was all that and more. Wow. Just like jammed into like a really intense 15-minute conversation. It was worth coming back here for, TBH. I've still got, even though there's nothing left for you, there's still a lot left for Bernard.
Do you see the poll, Ben?
Saw the TV1 poll. National 37, Labor 27, ACT and the Greens both on 12.
Wait, go again, start again.
So National on 37, down 2, I think, on the last One News Variant poll.
Yeah.
Labor 27, down 1 on the last One News Variant poll. ACT 12, up 2 on the last One News Variant poll. And the Greens 12, can't remember what they got last time.
So they're 12 and 12.
12 and 12. Well, even Stevens. Chris Hipkins has got a new line.
Yeah.
National have peaked.
Oh.
National have peaked.
Right.
And now they're on.
That's my line. That's what I've been saying about the minor parties. He can't take my line. He has to get his own. Surely.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. He does need to get his own. Did you hear, though, other big news of the day that we've established that Chris Hipkins has read a book?
Yes, I did see that.
He was on the podcast.
Have we had that independently verified, though?
That he's read a book?
Yeah.
No, we haven't. That's a good point. I should have. Oh, no, we did ask him about the details of Fantastic Mr. Fox, which was the book he chose.
Okay.
So it wasn't The Very Hungry Caterpillar, but it was The Fantastic Mr. Fox.
So, yeah. We asked him about, what's the names? Budge and Bimble Bomb and all the blogs and, you know, the bad men who kill the foxes. He seemed. He wasn't startled by that, so it scanned. That was good. Christopher Luxon has been on the pod.
I think it's the Minister of Customs.
Christopher Luxon, you have 45 minutes to call into the pod and discuss your mojo. Lots of interesting mojo findings over the course of the day.
Mm-hmm.
We got the mojo chart up there. Can you see it there?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
A lot of 11s.
Quite a few 11s.
Are these overjoyed jerks?
Yeah. So.
Anywho, how was Deb Ngāriwa-Packer?
She was good. I forgot to ask her about her mojo. You know what it's like, you do an interview, you've got to ask
someone
about their mojo.
Always the wahine Māori that doesn't get asked about their mojo.
Well, to be fair, she wasn't there when we tried to talk to her, so we had to squeeze into a short period of time. And that was the reason why. She was good. She thinks she's going to win.
That's why we need a separate Māori health authority so that we can have our mojos tiakied and manaaki.
Well, I'd like to take this opportunity to formally apologise for erasing Waimini Māori's mojo. It's not acceptable.
Yeah. and the day after Suffragette Day as well.
Oh, my God. Wow. We've got one question in.
Oh, my God, is this an audience question?
This is from Julie, who's our number one most beloved member of the spin-off.
Yeah.
She brought in these chocolate fishes for us.
Oh.
Aww.
Or is the plural just chocolate fish or chocolate fishes? I don't know.
Chocolate fi, I believe it is.
And her question, of course, is on the great Truman Dewey example of 1948. What did the team think of the possibility of a repeat of the Truman Dewey election of 1948? No, I wasn't around then, says Julie. But it is often cited as one of the most unexpected election results. Dewey on track to win in polls, fewer in those days, expecting him to win, but that is not what happened on the day. And I have a sense that Julie might be hoping that one of you might be able to conjure a scenario by which Labor would win the election. Is there? And it's a good question.
Here's the scenario.
Yeah.
National don't rule out New Zealand First.
Mm.
New Zealand First by becoming even more racist and even weirder about bathrooms. Somehow we managed to get 6 or 7%, and they take that off ACT or National. And after the election, Winston Peters throws his principles to the seven winds, joining all of his previous principles, and goes into coalition with Labour, Te Pāti Māori, and the Greens.
A four-part harmony.
I mean, a farmony, as you might say, if it was a half bilingual word.
Thank you. Thank you.
Do you like that?
Did you see Tahirua Toru Wā, up the Wā's sign?
Yes, I did. Cute. Yeah.
I did. I saw some stressful signs of appeasement from David Seymour on the news today. He being asked about the poll results, he said, "Well, of course we couldn't work closely with New Zealand First, so there'd have to be some sort of a looser arrangement." But that seems much less definitive than we won't sit around the cabinet table with them. And I'm like, it would be a shame if they went this racist and they still didn't keep New Zealand First out.
Bro, all of those guys will be friends with New Zealand First if they get in a whiff of having enough votes to make a government. That's the same with Labour and it's the same with Nash. I mean, we should take it as a given that both of those parties will form some sort of relationship with New Zealand First if it means they can govern.
Really?
Of course.
I mean,
you're not going to go, oh, you know what? I'm going to go sit on the opposition benches for three years.
There are examples that add evidence to that.
Mm.
Winston Peters has ruled out Labour. Hipkins has ruled out Winston Peters and said some pretty personal things about him. Like, do you really think that it's possible that Labour and New Zealand First?
Of course.
1 trillion %
You saw in the debate last night, the first time Hipkins got animated was to thunder from the pulpit that any government with Winston Peters in it is chaotic. And he didn't at any point say, and so we shouldn't have gone with him in 2017.
Well, you know? I mean, it was implicit, wasn't it? He said he'll run rings around you.
That was putting down Luxon. He was saying he'll run rings around you. He wouldn't run rings around me.
It wasn't a self-reflective thing of Winston's going to run rings around me.
Yeah. And I guess
like he's going to run rings around him, but he won't run rings around me because this is not my first rodeo.
Rodeo. The argument that you would make in terms of trying to justify that is, well, yeah, they say all sorts of things trying to get into government, but what's their record? Winston becomes foreign minister or treasurer. There aren't any particularly catastrophic, you know, you can say that some of the provincial growth fund was not well applied, but where are the catastrophic policy results, public policy results from having New Zealand First in government?
I think the problem for a governing party is more what doesn't happen and how that occurs. You know, there are numerous, my understanding is that in the New Zealand First Labour government, there would be a lot of times when Labour and New Zealand First would negotiate a position on a policy, paper would come up to cabinet after lots of work's done, the announcement's all planned, and then at the cabinet table, Winston Peters says, no, this is not happening. So, you know, that sort of stuff can be very disruptive to a government.
Oh, the handbrake.
If he was to get back into parliament and be in a position to, you know, if he was required to form a coalition, I suspect he'd be on his best behaviour. I think that he'll want to build his credibility back up and the credibility of New Zealand First back up in the eyes of voters to look like the steady hand of government rather than the handbrake of government.
An earthquake. There's an earthquake in the South Island today, just reading that.
Yeah.
Was that bad? Is that right?
I don't think it was too bad, but probably triggering or traumatic for, you know,
people from Waipaha. Geraldine.
I've got some more stuff.
It was at the start of the youthquake.
It was the missing million all moving at one time.
Yeah. Right, that's how you get your Dewey Truman
scenario. Yeah.
Anyone else? How many thousands of millions are listening to us at the moment?
Oh yeah, what's our
Samuel?
Do you want to hear all of the positive things people have been saying about you in the comments?
I only want to hear nice things about me. Yes, read them out quickly. Take your selection of the five most complimentary compliments. Go.
ALM F-bombs. Yay, more.
Slay.
Megapod every day.
Yeah, yeah.
Alice Neville says, quote, "Who are these overjoyed jerks?" is a mwah Annabelle line. I think it's your campaign slogan on that one.
I think wow. I might launch a party.
She's going to do her own podcast without these flunkies. Losers.
Flunkies.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Ben? You got some new information.
I was just going to say I've got a notes app. I was compiling stuff that was happening through the day.
Really? Oh.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm a professional.
So. Right, politics stuff or just general stuff?
No, this is all politics stuff. Okay. Yeah. Hipkins wrong about soda in schools.
So ooh. This was him in the debate last night saying that
when he said that they don't have them in primary schools
fizzy drinks have been banned
anymore.
In primary schools and they haven't been.
He said, "I've already banned fizzy drinks in primary schools
yeah.
and I'm going to do it in secondary schools."
Yeah, he did say that. And it's not correct.
No, that's another failure of delivery by Labor. Apparently when he was education minister, he did a briefing on it and worked up a policy document, but they never got around to doing it. So
did they not remember to hit the send button on the email?
It's real student politics brain. You know, it's like doing something means like signing something or like, you know, sending a paper to somebody.
It's like my life,
you know?
Admin.
It's like, yeah. And what happens after that? Well, who knows? Who fucking knows?
Well, you want someone to follow through on it. When it wasn't made a law, I assume that had been made a law. I gave a briefing.
Seriously, though, just thinking back to that
So anyway, he's promised he'll do a briefing. Sorry. He'll do a briefing on soda being banned for secondary schools.
So that would give ACT and National 61.
The poll results today.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which is a very fragile government.
So what would that give the rest? So that's 59. You can't govern with 61.
No, surely. And you, if you had an overhang, like if you had if Te Pāti Māori were to get like 4 seats and then get 2%,
2%, yeah,
then you'd get 121 seats probably.
Okay, and then imagine in this scenario that.
Gaurav Sharma.
That New Zealand First gets 4.9%. So then what happens? Like,
that's great news for
then National Act would have like 65 seats.
Yeah, it's so great news.
They'd love that.
Yep.
That would be their dream scenario.
But what would happen if you end up in a scenario where New Zealand First doesn't get back, but the right bloc's got 61?
No, because they'll get more because it's, you know, if they get, say, 49% between them, they get 49% of really, say, 94% of the votes cast.
The way they carve up the pie.
Thanks for killing my hypothetical, guys. It's so boring. I wanted to like talk about if it's a 61-59 split on the night without New Zealand First being there somehow. What does the right bloc do? Do they just like go bugger it? We're just going to go balls to the wall. 61.
Yeah, they would.
Would they not try and form some sort of friendship?
Sure. No.
I think they would.
They'd try it.
Get a memorandum with the
Greens. They'd have a discussion, but it wouldn't be. Unlikely to be a confidence prop, I don't think.
No.
And
you'd reach out.
But that result would be, if that result were to play out, that would be an incredible reverse. It would mean, to coin a phrase, that National have peaked. And that they're about to plummet. Like it would be an extraordinary turnaround based on the polls we've got now for that to happen.
The problem with Luxon's theory, Hipkins theory that National have peaked is that even if National have peaked, it seems that the vote that they've lost has gone to ACT, and so that doesn't really help Labor much. Mm. So bad news. Anyway, so that's soda. What else have we got?
It was good. Only another half hour to go, guys.
Hipkins' book preference, but we've already covered that.
Yeah, we've got that.
Although we haven't covered, so The Da Vinci Code, he said, was his favourite adult book.
Well, that's, yes. God. No, he said Dan Brown. And he said The Da Vinci Code.
Yeah.
Which is,
it's not much better, is it? It's
not good, and it's kind of the answer that you've been fed, probably this is it's a genuine answer, but the answer you've fed is like Lee Child, right? Because that's got a bit of cred as well as being, you know, an airport or batch read. Lee Child? Yeah.
Oh.
Fancy people love Lee Child.
Okay.
Yeah. It's true.
Okay. Well, what's Lee Child? Is that the
Jack Reacher?
Jack Reacher.
Yeah. Got you. Yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's
your favorite book, Hot Shot?
One of the Jack Reacher books. I can't remember their names. Duncan's out there, help me out. I interviewed him once, Lee Child. He was incredibly, as you'd imagine, very sardonic, British leather jacket wearing, chain smoking dude. Amazing.
Cool. Interesting.
I think Chris Hipkins should read some of his books. What's next on your list?
Chris Hipkins should get a leather jacket and chain smoke.
Oh, imagine that.
So cool.
Imagine if he just
they need a tiebreaker there because they were both on 23 for preferred PM.
Maybe.
They agreed on everything last night. Neither of them read adults' books.
Okay.
Like they need a tiebreak. One of them needs to smoke a pack of Lucky Strikes a day. Two packs.
Okay, well look, but that's the end goal. But I'm gonna suggest as a gateway to that, next debate, News Hub debate, Chris Hipkins comes on in the look that he was wearing that day in Napier. The wraparounds, the hoodie.
When Jenna went up to him and he was like, oh, Jenna, you're not, I'm trying to
Might have been Amelia. Was it Jenna?
I think it was Jenna.
Okay. But rocks up to the podium just like that, like what?
Honestly, what I would give for that.
I mean, that would really, they'll be like, oh, what, are you some corporate guy? What are you? and then like, who hasn't done a ram raid? He'd be like,
I'm so into it.
And then smoke a cigarette.
Yeah, in the studio.
Yeah.
And then the alarms go, so Luxon doesn't get a rate of reply. Just leave.
Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has the lowdown on everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. Join some of the superstars of the investment and business world as they share advice from their time in the US so you can make your mahi count in this massive market. The Investment Fix podcast, brought to you by Invest New Zealand. Tune in today.
What else could he do? What else could Chris Hipkins do in the second debate to really change the game?
Announce some meaningful policy?
I feel like this election is no longer about policy. I feel like you could announce tomorrow that everyone's going to be given a house for free and it probably wouldn't really change the way people are thinking. Dare I say it, this election is about mojo.
Mojo.
And vibes.
Yeah, did you
see? That's where we're at.
Did you see Luxon? Because on the news, you know, they had shots of Luxon at the goat farm. And, you know.
The goat farm.
No, it was Chris Luxon, National Party goat farm. You know, and he looked alive. You know, his voice has quickened. He sounds more like John Key than ever.
He's got that sassy swag of a guy polling well.
There's
no doubt about it.
Apparently he milked a goat.
Yeah.
And then the goat just was flooded with mojo, wings sprung out its side and like flew off into a rainbow with sparkling.
Oh, he went full Bobit on it. He just, you know, it was great footage.
What else happened today, Ben?
Let's check the notes.
Let's have a look. Sam, talk us through while we check our phones.
WorkSafe are restructuring up to 100 jobs.
Oh.
Ooh.
So that'll save them a few cuts after the election. Thomas Coughlin wrote something today in the Herald, and it's about sort of Labor's latest attack line, which, you know, I'm not sure about the magnitude of it, but, you know, it is actually a relevant difference between the parties, and they sort of touched on it in the debate yesterday.
Right.
Which is sort of the future of, National's fiscal plan, which is they take away all this money that's raised by the emissions trading scheme. They take it away from, you know, the policies that, you know, the current government had earmarked that for, they called it the Carbon Emissions Reduction Fund, mm-hmm. SERF. And that was earmarked for, you know, all of these different initiatives. One of them's, you know, the one that, where they bought the laser smelter thing for BlueScope Steel, and part of it was the Cash for Clunkers scheme, which they abandoned earlier in the policy bonfire. Mm-hmm. I think the ute tax, I think, is maybe funded out of it. You know, the ups, the odds and overs. And the crux of this difference is that under the emissions trading scheme, emitting a ton of carbon has a price, and it didn't used to. And the question is, you know, the person who's selling it, or, you know, it's at the earliest point, pays for it, but ultimately consumers will have to pay, right? So there's this question of, do you use the proceeds from that the government earns from being paid by carbon emitters, mm-hmm. putting a price on it, disincentivizing the emissions of carbons, do you use that money on what National would call corporate welfare and what the government and / Labor Party would call sort of emissions reduction initiatives, or do you just redistribute that money, you know, however, in tax cuts, or just put it into the consolidated fund, and then you rely entirely on the emissions trading scheme itself,
yes.
to lower emissions. Now, Labor's argument, National's argument is, you have all of these schemes of, you know, varying usefulness. You know, you don't know that they'll reduce emissions. So, you know, a lot of them just end up as sort of bribes or, you know, middle class subsidies, that sort of thing. Labor's counterpoint is, if you rely on the market only, you will inevitably get price shocks, because the price of carbon has to go quite high before you'll actually get meaningful emissions and changes in consumer behaviour. So that's a genuine difference between the two parties, where there are not that many. Coughlin's article is a good starting point. But I think that is something that maybe hasn't come to the fore in the debate so far.
The potential for that to seize the public consciousness is relatively small, I would have thought. The thing that the National Party has done is said that we're going to use those funds and call it a carbon dividend, but it's not a carbon dividend You know, the carbon dividend is argued, for example, by Eric Crampton, who is very hot on an issue like this, would involve actually distributing that money to people as a set carbon, so you would see that amount of money was coming towards you. And there are different ways of designing it whereby you'll be required to spend it in ways that are related to the environment or not. But neither of them is offering a carbon dividend. Mm.
The thing is that, like, people do actually care, but we're not talking about it in a way where they can understand the real-world impacts of it on their life, eh? Like, everyone in Eke Rōra Whiti cares very much about all of these issues, but when it's being spoken about at that level, it kind of washes over people, you know.
And there's a danger.
And politicians need to think about how they communicate these really important issues, so that all New Zealanders can participate in the decision-making around it.
Yeah, but there's a danger sort of making it too simple as well, because was it this most recent week, the Sunday Star Times had a poll where they sort of said, where they put to people, would you pay 5 cents a litre extra for gas if that, you know, combated carbon, you know, our climate change? And what they found was that it was about sort of 10 cents a litre. People were like, nope, absolutely not. But that's interesting, because the effect of the emissions trading scheme on petrol prices right now is actually more than 10 cents. Even when the carbon price is relatively low, it's about 11 cents, I think. And so if it's not sort of transparent to people, you know, they just sort of see it as part of the kind of mix. Whereas if you specially tag it and say there's a climate thing, 5 extra cents, people start really bristling.
Yeah. Mm. Really, I think, confusing. Too, it's not necessarily about speaking down to people or dumbing it down. It's just about talking about it in a way that it's relevant to them. So, like, you know, on the East Coast, you know, we talk about, you know, carbon farming and, you know, planting more trees and billion-dollar trees and that, like, there's not a huge appetite for people to go and plant permanent forests in the East Coast on behalf of the Haukainga. They're dealing with, like, forestry slash and all of that stuff. The last thing they want is a whole lot more pine trees getting planted there to supposedly sequester carbon but it doesn't actually provide a whole lot of jobs because your uncles don't get to, or the nephews don't get to go cut it down in 30 years and take it off, you know, to the ports and stuff. So, yeah, I guess it's just about talking about these things in a way that people understand how it affects their communities.
And that, I mean, just actually coming back to that, I think we mentioned it last week, which was this morning. It is a little interesting. Maybe I missed it during yesterday's debate. Did they mention the East Coast at all? Did they mention I'm not sure.
That's
Cyclone Gabrielle. I don't think
they mentioned it once.
I mean, Bernard was making that point. We were talking earlier, and it is at the time. We probably talked about it on the pod. I certainly wrote a thing when it was kind of like, this is something that will last all the way through to the election, and it will, you know, it will rear itself everywhere because we can no longer blah, blah, blah. And it's just not true. For the people who live there, absolutely. For people in Piha, the people in Tarawhiti, the people in Wairoa, for the rest of us, it's slipped away.
Yeah. And part of that is about, you know, how the media covers elections. Like we tend to chase around the politicians, we're going to the goat farms and all of that sort of stuff, and some of those big important issues can just slide off the radar because media organisations don't keep the people there permanently on the ground, you know, reporting every day from Wairoa or Esk Valley or any of those other places that have been that are still living in a pile of silt.
Mm. Pipkins was in Wairoa today, it should be said. I don't know if that ended up on the 6 o'clock news.
Whether there was a media pay
with him. He went to Gisborne, then to Wairoa, and then I think to Napier, and then he's doing a roadie through the Wairarapa or something. I mean, the other thing that came out today, which is sobering, is the latest Ipsos Issues Monitor.
Yeah.
I say sobering as far as the climate change piece is concerned because that had slid. It had gone up into the top five, I think, for the first time ever back in February or something, and it sort of slid away. And now economy has come up, which is just another version of cost of living.
Mm. Mm.
And as far as the message it sends, it's all lit up in blue. You know, they do the top 10 issues and the party that's considered the best equipped to deal with that issue. You know, it's cost of living, law and order, etc.
Yeah.
I think Joel was explaining before on the pod that it's that National even have health and education now, and that combined with another question where they assess the performance of the government. They don't do straight polling, but they do assess there's a question on the performance of the government that's the lowest.
Rank it out of 10.
It's the lowest point since they started in 2018. Mm. And you know, you kind of see this, and I half asked Grant Robertson about this, I didn't include that, but then you also wake up in the morning and they're talking on the radio about petrol going up to $3.50 a litre. Mm. And you kind of think, I mean, you made this point, Ben, a couple of weeks ago. It's, you know, you can overcomplicate, overanalyze, and do all sorts of things. But really, those are not circumstances in which you win an election. That doesn't mean that's not to absolve Labour. They have been the government for 6 years. It's true. But.
And Robertson's been pretty good on, you know, Robertson obviously he's got a bit of a motivated reasoning there, but, you know, he says, you know, I think he's said and conceded himself at various debates, you know, he says people want to change.
Yeah.
And then all he can say is, you know, a new government, I don't think a new government is the way to the change you want.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a hard argument to make.
And it's a hard argument to make because you don't have that many levers, you know. Yeah. You've got to vote. You
it's like Annabelle's else, decided to break up with us. We're saying, you need something new. We can see that. What about
us? Changed my T-shirt.
What if we bring in Winston Peters?
mediate the whole, I mean, you know, it's, the other thing I noticed in the debate last night, there was a moment. God, I didn't say this today in the first pod this morning. There was a moment where...
It's all right, we're working up to it.
Christopher Luxton, Hipkins, who knows? Chris Luxton said, you've had 6 years to do something about it. And Jessica Mutch-McKay was asking a separate question because there was a bit of overtalk and it ended to do something about it. And it just sort of landed, do something about it, do something about it, like this kind of, you know, like a delay pedal. And it was just like, well, there it is, right? Like it's, again... you've had 6 years. They were talking about law and order at that point. It's kind of, doesn't matter what the extenuating circumstances are, what the headwinds are. And it's like,
and it is very, it is very funny, right? Because it's like, look, you came into office 6 years ago and, you know, you knew how bad it was then. You should have. You know, which of course, you know, is subsequent to a national government. The whole 9 long years, et cetera, 6 years to do something. I mean, look, Luxon, you know, I think everyone's gone about it over to death, but Luxon hit his lines. He really got it out more fluently. And yeah, it's tough.
I thought Hipkins was quite good on the law and order stuff, talking about you know, the policy that they've got that has seen, you know, had an 80% success rate as opposed to, the boot camps and the last lot of boot camps, what were they called, the LSV or whatever, limited voluntary service, whatever it was, that had a really high failure rate. And the other thing too that I think Hipkins did well last night, but Labor have failed to do well over the cost of living crisis, was reminding people that, you know, but because of the way they managed the economy during COVID and stuff, we had really, really low unemployment figures, and that spending actually helped to keep us ticking over. We could be in a much worse position, but they haven't been strong on that narrative. So, you know, it was interesting to hear it last night.
Yeah. I raised this with Grant Robertson as well. I totally understand you don't want to talk about COVID. I get it. Like, that's what I would, if I were in those shoes, I would do the same thing. It's like, why are we going to talk about COVID? That's insane. Nobody wants to talk about COVID. It just sets off a whole lot of kind of traumatic synapses. It's not a good thing to talk about. But it remains probably what we will remember this government for the most. It remains their most impressive achievement. And yes, Luxon kind of cauterized it in the debate by saying, well, I think they did well in the first half. The second half, da da da. Everyone forgets that we lived in this kind of, you know, this idyll for however long it was, a year and a half, while the rest of the road world was melting down. And what Hipkins didn't say last night is we lived for a long time and we made it difficult because people were dying. People's parents, people's aunties, people's siblings were dying around the world.
And we were the envy of the world.
It wasn't perfect. It was lumpy. And I don't know. The times I've heard Hipkins talk about that, last night, Annabelle, as you say, but also in a separate speech, he sort of almost got a little bit of energy from it because he remembers that. And it was a crazy time. And like I say, totally understand that's not your go-to.
Yeah.
That's not your go-to argument. Hey, re-elect us because of COVID, but it's still something.
Speaking of COVID, there was another important news story today. Bad luck, an unlucky story for Lawyer NZ. Did you see that?
Oh, they didn't register any.
They only registered three people.
Yeah,
but they got 1% in the poll.
But then the third person quit.
So they've only got two. Is it just Liz and one?
Who's the other one?
Oh my god,
I don't know.
So I think they had a launch at Eden Park on Saturday. I saw a lone woman carrying a Loyal NZ placard, and I was like, well, she must be keen. And then I was driving past Eden Park, and there was a Counter Spin Media. Like a trailer there, so I see.
I'm like, if you can't get your party registered in time, like, I can't wait to see what she does with the country.
It's amazing. There's so much interesting kind of internecine stuff going on in that world because they're mad with Winston Peters, people who follow Loyal New Zealand. There are other people mad who are in the Leighton Baker Party, and obviously the Brian Tamaki Freedoms NZ. They were the ones who did the umbrella, so they're mad with them too. And this woman, Samantha Edwards, is that her name? The one who denounced Tamaki for having had vaccination centres in the car park.
Oh, yep.
Did this sort of long, sort of 35-minute video denouncing what they were. She introduced, there was this person who was a psyops, is the word she used, a psyops agent on Reality Check Radio, because there was this individual that she discovered who was on RCR Radio, which is the you know, Conspiracy Alliance, Chantel Baker type, whatever,
Reality
Voices
Check.
For Freedom,
Reality
Radio Station.
Check. Yeah.
And this guy who's been giving advice to people about the wasted vote.
Oh, yes.
And about if you fall under 5%, you know, that you shouldn't vote for any parties that are on 1 or 2% because then the vote will be wasted. She'd done some research into this guy.
Wow.
This guy's name was Cameron Slater. She'd found this book.
Dirty
Politics. And that what's more, but wait, reveal he was also has family links to the National Party. It was just like you think of Cam Slater who's ended up going, oh, well, I can get an audience there, whatever, I'll take it, I'll do whatever it takes to keep blogging. And then it's like, well, you know, that's what happens, right?
Well,
when you take a bite of that cookie.
Look, in a way, she's right. She's not right for the... She's not, her reasoning's not right. But, you know, the New Zealand First courting that vote, you know, it's not a psyop, it's not a setup, but it is a scam, right? It's courting these people. Winston Peters wants to be foreign minister again. He's not going to issue invitations to the World Health Organization or the UN or Davos or any of that. He's going to be right there in the middle with the globalists at the banquets. And the, you know, this is a guy who loves multinational and multilateral organizations and the rules-based world order. I mean, you know, if they vote for Peters, they deserve what they get. And, yeah.
Yeah, they're going to get the globalist agenda. That's what you're saying. Should we talk about that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Got anything else to happen today, Ben? We've only got 12 minutes to fill.
Fuck.
12 minutes to fill. Okay. Terry, did you get that video that you could play out? No.
Sam, have you got any more compliments? Give Ben some compliments. Is there any Ben compliments?
Oh, no. There was a fact check. There was an RNZ fact check saying that Christopher Luxon was incorrect when he said many times during the debate that no health figures had gotten better under Labor.
Hopkins came out in the second one. I think he'd got it from David Talbot, his pollster, or from Andrew Curtin, who were in the room with him. He came out saying smoking numbers are better. That's a health issue. Is that the one, or have RNZ found more?
RNZ used they had various cancer registrations, and they're sort of between, they said that a number of them had drop-offs between 2017 and 2019, and I'm like, oh. Yeah. I mean, one of those years wasn't actually, Labor weren't really in government for much of it, but, you know, sure. So, you know, that's good news for Hipkins for the next debate. He can note that down or print that off. Shit.
TV3 debate tomorrow night.
Yeah, are we going to that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's they call it the power brokers to add, don't they? So that will be, who will that be? Well, that will be Winston. One of the Greens.
Marama. Yep.
Te Pāti Māori?
Debbie. Yep.
And Seymour. David Seymour?
Yep.
So it's quite a tight four. It was quite good last year. I remember last time. Did you go last time? And I think Winston Peters was really, really impressed. I was sort of surprised that he was in heavy handbrake mode at the time. You know, he was sort of trying to scramble around and find a strategy. But that'll be interesting. What comes out of that?
Well, I mean, is it played on air or is it streamed?
Yeah. It's noticed. I think it's a half hour delay or something, but it's on. Yeah, I think it's on NewsHub tomorrow night.
Look, could be valuable around the margins. I think the real interest there is the Peters Seymour kind of clash.
I think it'll be quite clashy.
Richard Preble, I think, wrote that it will be, he obviously has a dog in the fight. Called David, but he said that it'll be David Seymour versus the rest, and everyone will be around trying to slap down Seymour. And if Seymour survives unscathed, then the future is beautiful.
So, if Richard Preble is still supporting David Seymour, but Roger Douglas isn't, does that mean that Roger Douglas and Richard Preble are not bros anymore?
I think they broke up a while ago.
I mean, look, for context, Roger Douglas does this basically every election. He says, ACT has deviated too far from my original ideals, then become a populist party and I can no longer support them. He said this when he was an ACT MP between 2008 and 2011. You know, God bless Sir Roger, but, I mean, he's one of the last of the real purists.
Did you ever actually read his open letter? It was only reported in short, and I found it on one of the New Zealand political research, something, one of those ones, you know, those slightly slightly weird ones. And it's amazing. It's a, I found it recently before I interviewed David Seymour, trying to see if there was anything actually that I could quote at him. It was almost nothing. It was amazing. It was basically about how his voucher systems really have not been followed through. And, you know, that's his
And that's idea. His passion. That's why he says he's still a socialist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because Sir Roger was never, he was never a classic, you know, sort of classic orthodox, you know.
He wasn't Roger Kerr.
He had this very idiosyncratic market-based, but very socially democratic kind of approach to things. Mm. The mad scientist, you know, we won't see his likes again.
Richard Preble, on the other hand, is still, you know, is still the dad, the uncle, the godfather of the egg party. You know, he's still, I think until relative recently, he was still writing Free Press quietly, wasn't he?
The common ancestor is Nelson Mandela.
Is Rodney still friends with ACT? Or
no, what? Rodney's on radio, on RCR radio now. Rodney is hosting, you know, with Peter Williams and who's the dude who used to be on National Radio? RNZ?
Paul someone? No.
Paul. That's right. You like that? Paul.
Can't remember. I know the one you mean.
Yeah. Though. What a time.
With the big hair.
Lots of hair.
Mm.
Yeah. Again, he was in that sort of strange.
How was your interview with Seymour? I haven't listened to it yet.
Okay. It was okay. I mean, I think I did feel a little bit like I took a knife to a gunfight. You know, I mean, he's just a machine. He's really hard out. I mean, you know, it was an interesting conversation. Mm. But people seem to find it interesting.
Mm.
I don't know. Did you listen to it yet?
No, I haven't heard
Why
it
not?
Yet.
Ben, how come?
I saw that it was one of the episodes that didn't have me in it. I've been pretty snowed under.
Right. A lot of work.
Yeah.
A lot of work preparing for for a change of government.
It came out on Saturday, did it? Or?
I don't know.
I think it came out on Saturday. So what I've been doing is I've been blocking up on like Thursday night. I listen to like 6 hours of New Zealand politics podcasts. So tomorrow it'll be 18 to get up to speed with this. But that's why I haven't listened to it. But, you know, you're right. Look, the thing is these guys are very good. You know, Winston, you know, I don't know, did you say Winston's interview with Moana, Maniapoto, with Moana? I mean, he's great. You know, you actually forget, you know, you're like, oh, he's so charming. And you know, he gets really indignant and talks about his background in fighting for Māori land rights, which actually is, you know, his sort of creation story. And, you know, talking about, you know, how he was Minister of Māori Affairs and all the things he's done and how he understands.
Ah, well, this is a bit awkward. This is Toby Manhire, and that was when the recording stream cut out because YouTube had reached its limit. We'd maxed out YouTube. There's a cutoff point after a certain time. It's just shy of 12 hours, mysteriously. And so who knows what Ben was about to say. If I recall correctly, it was something really insightful and witty, and quite moving. And then Annabelle said something kind of groundbreaking and affecting, and then I said something humorous to round off the conversation. There was just a lot of applause, tears. It was just an amazing time. I can't recall the detail, but that's all we've got. That's the end. That was the end of our 12 hours of podcasting, the end of this shorter podcast that you're listening to. Thanks for bearing with us. We will be back soon with more classic, ordinary politics chat.
Hello for Lover, I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spinoff. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spinoff member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.